Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of This Is My Son. I am your host, Kathy Fisher, and with me today I have, I'm trying to read it on my cue card here. Is it David Faulkner?
Yeah, that's nearly it. That's in the old tongue.
Is it, so, you know, correct me.
Tavis. David Faulkner.
David. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's David Faulkner. David Faulkner is here.
Yeah, like the writer that nobody really enjoys reading. I'm not related.
I read a Faulkner book in middle school.
How was that?
I think I kind of liked it. I mean, it was like an eighth grade, like, advanced placement English class thing. Where one of the assignments is basically we had the option to pick any book that was in our teacher's, like, bookshelf.
Okay.
And, you know, there's, like, a lot of people pick, you know, like, Ender's Game.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, The Giver. And I'm like, oh, The Sound and the Fury. That sounds good.
Oh, it sounds intense. I'll tell you that.
I've heard of this William Faulkner fellow.
Yeah.
I am in eighth grade, and I'm going to read it. And I did, and I wrote a book report on it.
Okay.
God bless.
So was it a loud and furious novel, or was it...
No, I mean, it's just very hard to understand what's going on.
Okay.
There's a lot of, like, characters with the same name. A lot of time jumping. There's not a lot of causality in it.
So it's like Looper, but
written form. It's what the movie Looper was based on.
I see.
I don't know if it's in the credits somewhere. It might be at the end of the credits.
I actually have not seen Looper. Because the idea of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis hybrid is, like, the most terrifying thing I can imagine.
You get used to it really quickly.
Really?
I really, really like Looper. I will advocate for it.
Okay.
That's not what this individual episode of this podcast is about.
No, it's not.
The name of the game, I keep realizing that people might be starting to listen to this on an arbitrary episode, like probably your fans, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The Faulkner heads.
The Falk heads.
Falk heads, yeah.
they're starting right now. And they're like, what is he her son? Is this a moms and sons podcast?
Am
no,
I
it's
your
not.
Son? I don't think I am.
I haven't ever checked.
No.
You want to do the DNA tests? I'm open to it.
Just send me a jar of bodily fluid.
Okay.
That's a lead in for this episode.
The name of the game is This Is My Son, and how it's played is that I invite one of my friends or enemies to come on the show. They pick a piece of media. You know, it could be an album, it could be a TV show, it could be a movie, it could be a book, it could be anything, essentially, that they love unconditionally, even if they acknowledge it might have shortcomings. they send me this son. Over the course of the week, I consume and internalize their son and try to form my own opinion. In response, I give them a son of my own that is usually in some way inspired by their son, or there's some sort of thematic connection. And I ask my guests to enjoy my son. And then we first discuss my guest's son, and then we rate it, usually on an arbitrary rating scale, because no son can be directly compared to another son.
Oh, no.
And then in the second half, we talk about my son, and we rate that son. And that is pretty much the whole thing.
And let me just say, I love this premise for this podcast. I think this is a really cool idea that you're doing here. And because, you know, you love media, I love media, we love talking about it, and we love talking about the things that we really enjoy and why we enjoy them. My son that I pinned a little note to his jacket and put him on a bus and sent him over to you.
I left him waiting in the cold for 5 hours before I came to pick him up.
And
I did, eventually.
Is the first album by a band called The Proto Men. It is self-titled album. It's eponymous. It is a album. It is a rock opera about Mega Man. And it's sort of a gritty dystopian re-envisioning of the Mega Man franchise, which is, it's kind of a funny premise, I think. But then actually, when I listened to the album, and I first discovered it, I'd say almost a decade ago, or if it, it feels like it's been that long, certainly. And I thought, this is just ridiculous. I have to listen to this. And I listened to it and I thought, oh no, I actually really like this. I unironically really enjoy this. This is just a really good album. It's got a cool story. I think the music is really good. The vocals are great. The lyrics are interesting. I came upon it at a time where I was in my life, I was really into sort of dystopian lit, because I was going through some stuff, and so I was really into stuff that was like gritty or sort of things like that, and so it became very meaningful. It became a very meaningful album to me in that way, and so I'm excited for the second half of the show when we get to talk about an album that I assume has equal weight. Depth of meaning to you in the same ways.
I'm sure going through a hard time in my life.
the comfort it must have brought you, the reassurance.
So, I before I started listening to the Proto Men, I looked it up because I had never heard of it before, and found out the Mega Man backstory. Mm-hmm. And I will say this is probably maybe a key to this episode, is I have never played Mega Man. It was not among my video game experience, especially as a child.
Oh, man.
I know. I'm sorry.
Wow.
So I probably lost a lot of the meaning and maybe the emotional resonance that you might have gotten out of it, because I don't have anything to compare it against. Like, for all I know, Mega Man is as melodramatic as...
No.
The lyrics in the prototype.
Absolutely is not. it's a silly little, it's a little robot man, and you shoot little pellets out of your hand, and you fight goofy villains like Cut Man and Wood Man, Rock Man, just like these preposterous villains, and then you destroy them, and as we all know, once you kill something and eat it, you gain its power, and so
obviously.
Yeah.
So you're saying that there isn't a climactic battle where he has to kill his brother?
No, that doesn't happen.
Oh, well.
This is, no, so, it's an adaptation. It's directly inspired, I would say. Inspired.
Somewhat of a satire.
I wouldn't say satire, though. It's more of just like they took some of the characters and this general idea of this universe that's... it's ruled by Dr. Wily and his legions of robots, and they were like, well, okay, that sounds kind of like a dystopian thing. We could do some fucking, like, Blade Runner shit with that. Let's do it.
Okay. I guess... So... Here's my thing.
Okay.
Here's my thing with the Proto Men.
Here's your thing.
I don't think musically it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are definitely some genuinely... good tracks on there. It's been established in this podcast that I do not particularly care for the lo-fi aesthetic.
Mm.
If you can reference back to the Guided by Voices episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe not my thing,
okay.
But I can appreciate it.
Okay. See, I really like the lo-fi aesthetic, so that really works for me.
So there's a question that we ask on this podcast almost every episode now, certainly every episode that involves music in some way.
Mm.
Are guitars cool?
I used to think they were, but I'm not sure anymore.
That's pretty much the same. I mean, last week's episode, or sorry, the week before last, I came to the conclusion that they were cool. But then I sort of fluctuate back and forth, because this week I think it's definitely guitars being nerdy as heck.
Oh yeah, they're definitely nerdy in this iteration. That's kind of the idea, I think, though, is it's just like nerd rock, but like heavy stuff, not just kind of whimsical. Like, I'm gonna sing about Zelda. Da, 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 da.
Mm-hmm. Because they are really putting like genuine drama and pathos into their conceptions of these characters.
Yeah, I think it's definitely. I think what's interesting to me about it is that yeah, they use this particular genre, but it's very much a tragic opera. It's an operatic thing.
Mm-hmm. It's truly a rock opera in the classical sense.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I also have an appreciation for, and try to consistently keep my mind open to when people are trying to indulge their, fantasies, mm-hmm. Their imaginations more.
Right.
So I also appreciate it and support it from that end. Because there's too much, in general, too much self-consciousness about nerding out, as it were, about your interests and being like, I'm going to take just, this base concept and create this elaborate alternate reality, sci-fi, dystopian future world and be really invested in it. Like, I respect that.
Yeah.
Mad respect to that as a practice and as a concept. Okay. As someone currently devising her own Dungeons & Dragons campaign, I appreciate it.
Excellent. I'm, by the way, very excited about this idea.
Yeah. It's going to be either very bad or pretty good.
It's only one of two things.
Yep. Nowhere in between.
Nowhere in between. Nobody's
and not better than pretty good.
I don't know. I think it's the play. I think it's the interaction of the GM and the players that make it. I mean, the story. I think you'll find as you GM, it doesn't matter that much because players will do whatever the heck they want.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna have to relax my grip on the world a little bit, I think, because Peter already wrote like this outrageously detailed backstory that actually introduces stuff into the universe that I hadn't added, which I like. But yeah, anyways, off topic. I assume have listened to their subsequent albums.
Actually, I'm only somewhat peripherally familiar with their subsequent albums. I've listened to them a little bit. Part of it was that I just loved the first album so much. And then, I listened to a couple of the tracks that they were releasing to show off, some of the new stuff they were doing. And I was like, yeah, this is okay, but it just doesn't have the same sort of, raw viscerality that the earlier stuff did, where I think there's... In a lot of the tracks, because of the pacing and the sort of the driving energy of it, it feels like there's a desperation, and the lo-fi kind of contributes to that, I think, to that aesthetic.
And it's not a long album. I mean, it's pretty... No. You get through it pretty fast, so it doesn't really ever lose pace.
Yeah. I think that's another thing that I really enjoy about it, is that it tells this really really beautifully dark story that there's a richness to the world, but it's also very compact. There's nothing in there that doesn't need to be in there. It just kind of give you the story and it's done. It doesn't waste time. And I appreciate that. That's one of the differences between certain conceptions of some TV shows. It's like, tell the story you're going to tell, then be done with it. Don't just run on for as many seasons as you can possibly squeeze out of it. And so,
and then I guess the other thing, another recurring theme with the podcast, maybe because I've been making it a recurring theme, is I like to draw comparisons to Lord Huron's Strange Trails.
Okay.
Because to me, they both are constructing a specific world. And I think Max and I have talked about this on the show.
Okay.
That it's kind of like the album itself is a window into this sort of alternate reality. Mm. And it can be evocative of the world without explicitly listing everything about it.
Yeah.
So you can get into that kind of fantasy headspace.
Yeah.
From listening to it without having to be like, I'm going to read a book or something.
Yeah.
And it allows you to then start building your own, adding your own detail onto it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think, and this is another thing that appeals to me about it, is that it's suggestive, but it's not comprehensive. It gives you a sense of a much greater and more interesting world out there, but it's just enough of a taste of it to kind of entice you and be like, oh yeah, this is a cool thing out there, and you can kind of do with it what you will. That to me is far more successful than other pieces of media that just kind of like, we're gonna outline everything.
Here's every detail. If you violate it, you're wrong.
It's like the Lord of the Rings problem. And yeah. Like, you can't fucking talk about Hobbit feet for 12 chapters and expect me to care about the rest of the story. You can't do that, JRR. I love you, but you can't do this to me.
Well, and so the interesting thing about the Hobbit world or the Lord of the Rings world, the Tolkien world, is that because he did cover almost every aspect of the world and its history, it's not really a framework that you can build on and be like, I'm going to set my own fantasy inside this, because there's a sort of a rigid timeline,
yeah,
and order of events. And like, these were the characters who were here, and you can't really deviate from it. It's not,
yeah.
Despite the fact that it inspired a lot of, you know, D&D and a lot of related fantasy mm-hmm. properties, it is not a good fantasy framework as a world. It's not something you can extend.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, and I think that's why all of those frameworks popped up, because people were so enamored with this world, but they realized there was nowhere to go in it. So it's like, well, okay, I'm going to do just like this world, but I can actually do shit in it now.
Uh-huh. Just like this world, but without all of the detail.
Yeah.
Basically.
Or yeah, the rules and the history.
Uh-huh.
It's a good album. I get the sense that you're saying like, yeah, I respect it, I understand it, but I'm not getting the sense that you actually enjoyed it all that much.
I'll say this. I don't expect that I will spend a lot more time listening to it.
That's fair.
Which might be a marker of how much. I mean, it's like, musically, I think it was okay, but to me, it doesn't do that much for me.
Okay.
But I totally respect, and I think I'm about to make a sweeping regional generalization.
Oh my God.
But these boys, the Proto Men boys, are from Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Lord Huron from Michigan.
Yeah.
Creators of D&D from Minnesota and Wisconsin.
I see where you're going with.
I think people from the Midwest / the quote-unquote flyover states, a term which I really hate.
Mm-hmm.
Because Detroit, Michigan's a hub. Sorry, it's a Delta hub. You don't fly over it, you stop there.
Right, right. Everyone has been to Detroit if they've flown across the country. It's just...
Yeah, all right, guys. Cry me a river. Ooh, I have to have a layover in Detroit. All right, that's because it's a hub.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways. My point is that I think when you grow up in the Midwest, you are pushed by your circumstances and environment mm-hmm. to be more imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that, you know, people from the coasts and from California and New York haven't made interesting stuff, because I'm yeah. sure they have.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. It's that they can make stuff that's more about their lives. We make stuff that's about, like, fucking wizards, robot rebellions.
Exactly, yeah.
We do the cool things.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
nerdy but cool things.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. It's because, I mean... Think about, like, the coastal regions, right? You have, like, in California, for example, just these just beautiful vistas along the coast. Like, if you've ever driven mm-hmm. down the Highway 1, the Pacific Coast Trail, it's just, oh my God, it's agonizingly beautiful. And you could just do that forever, and it's poetic, and you could just describe it. And if you're in Michigan, you're like, well, there's some shitty trees... and, like,
and
a
strip malls.
Swamp. And I guess, yeah, there's a Kmart over there.
There's a lot of trash, just miscellaneous trash that's blown into these bushes.
I love Stuart Vandenbrink, your friend and mine. He, during the time we were living together in college, he was starting to write a lot of raps. And Stu firmly believed in writing about things that he knew. And so Stu, being from Holland, Michigan, does not have a lot of really... I guess conventional, what you could think of experiences within the rap genre. He's not going to rap about being tough or being on the streets or in the hood or anything like that. So he wrote a rap about our dishwasher. He wrote a rap about grilled cheese sandwiches and how much he enjoys them. and I'm just like, yeah, I guess that makes sense. But I think that's indicative of like, that's fucking all there is.
That's life. when you're here, when you're in the Midwest.
That's it. And so you're like, well, I'm going to envision a robot dystopian future because it's that or corn.
Yeah.
I like this. I like this theory.
I like this theory too because it both exalts me into a position of having some sort of special power. And I think that...
Like all good theories.
Like all good theories, it makes me feel better about myself.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And I think it the Midwest gets such a short shrift and such a...
Yeah.
You know, that a lot of there's a lot of overgeneralizations about our behavior and who we are. It's really, you know, a fairly heterogeneous population.
Yeah.
And, you know, culture-wise.
I agree.
But yeah, and then I think that we should get some positive associations, even if they are nerd ones.
And you know, we may not have the glamour of New York, or the beautiful vistas
of any kind of beauty around
any
us
kind of natural beauty whatsoever.
Hey, shit, man! If I drive for an hour and a half, there are some pretty nice hills.
Well, okay. Actually, I do want to backpedal a little bit on this because I like Superior.
Yeah, oh, I agree. There are definitely natural beauty locations.
Yes.
In the Midwest, all around it. But I mean, they're usually not the breathtakingly gorgeous things that you find in the West.
Yeah.
In terms of like, you know, mountains and oceans and hills and beautiful, really, truly like outrageously gorgeous stuff. It's more subtly, it's classily gorgeous in a understated way.
Yeah. It's the sort of thing where like, this is nice.
This is peaceful. That's another
thing. Yeah.
It's not, there's not the violence of
landscape
that there is in the West, I think.
Yes. It's like you're driving through like Nevada, right, in the high desert, and it's just like you're on another planet.
Uh-huh.
It's this alien world, and it's the sort of thing where like you see the mountains and the sky and the desert, and you're like, I understand why people like form religions in deserts, because because this is just unreal. This is unreal.
This is fucking crazy.
Yeah, whereas, you know... Otherwise, it's like, well, you know, I'm going to go down to the lake, float around on an inner tube for a little while.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to start a religion about, you know, there's some scrawny, like, sort of shrub trees.
I found a turtle the other day. I think I'm going to worship it.
I found, there's a hill that took me upwards of 10 minutes to walk up.
I was out of breath.
I was a little winded. Granted, I was a little winded at the top.
I could see for a mile.
I saw my friend across the street.
I tried to yell at him. It was so far away he couldn't hear me very well. He was like, what?
He could only make out a couple words.
But we waved, and I was able to communicate what I wanted to. And then we went to the Coney Island, and it was great.
Uh-huh. Oh, God, fucking hell, to bring that up. I want a Coney Island like so bad.
We've diverged from the proto-men. Maybe there's a Coney Island in this rich fiction. I don't know. They leave that up to you.
They don't tell you whether or not, inclusively, whether or not there is a Coney Island where I can get my chili dog.
So after Proto-Man kills his brother and then abandons the citizens to be destroyed by Wily's robots, maybe he goes down to the Coney Island.
He gets a dog or two.
Gets a dog or two. It's been a long day. He's got to sort some shit out.
He's hungry. He's had some emotional trauma.
And you know how you feel emotional trauma? Chili dogs and fries.
You know that'll give you some emotional trauma on your ass. Wow. Well,
that's... Nothing in life is free.
It's true. It's so true.
You got to pay the toll somewhere. Rectally or otherwise.
I feel that I'm ready to rate your proto-men.
All right. Before you do that, I wanna throw one last thing in. Just one
Go
last
for
interesting
it.
Thing. Okay. Now, one of the other things that I find very interesting about this is that it is operatic. It is a drama, very much so. But one of the things that they do upend, one of the tropes that they upend, is this sort of messianic figure trope, and it they kind of screw with it in two ways. So first, they break the rule of threes, where there's only two messiahs instead of like a third you would expect would be like a third thing. So the first one is Proto-Man, and he fails as a messiah and then ends up being recruited to Wily. And then the second is Mega Man, and he is supposed to be the replacement messiah. And then he goes and he realizes, oh no, this is just, none of this is going to work. This doesn't matter. These people need to stand for themselves. I can't save them. That this notion of a messiah is outrageous. That I can't fix this whole society. I can't fix it all. It's not, I'm just one Robo Man.
I'm just one Robo Man.
Uh-huh. And then after he the trauma of killing his brother at the behest of these people that kind of watched the dude die in the first place, like die in quotes in the first place. He's just like, you know what, screw it. And so he leaves. And so it's this idea of like this messianic figure that's like, no, I just don't want to do this. And so twice that happens. And I think that is really interesting to me. Just sort of
Messiah who pieces out, basically.
Yeah, basically. Twice. That happens twice in this story. Uh-huh. And I'm like, man, that's not a sort of thing that you see in a lot of Western media. That doesn't happen a lot.
That's true. Yeah, it's definitely a non-typical narrative structure.
And so I think that's what's also fun about it is that it's a short album, but it's a fun romp in this universe that is very imaginative and different, and it's also very non-traditional in terms of a lot of its structure. And so it kind of elevates it from like you would expect. That if someone was like, I'm going to make a Mega Man band, rock band, about Mega Man, that it would probably not be very good. But it's surprisingly well constructed. And I think,
I mean, I'll say this as someone without the Mega Man background. I think it stands on its own. I mean, I don't think you need to have the Mega Man. I'm sure that maybe slightly adds some value to it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's necessary.
True. Oh, yeah, that's true. I would agree with that. Okay. That's my soapbox. It is very clear that I really like the Proto Men.
Well, yeah, obviously.
How would you
it's
rate
your son?
Yeah, it's my son. How would you rate my son?
I think I'm gonna rate it on a scale of 1 to 5. Mega Man Coney Island dogs. The number of Coney Island dogs that Mega Man chomps.
Okay.
And I will give it a solid 3.
Okay.
3 dogs.
3 Coney Island chili dogs for D. Okay.
Which I think it means, you know, I think it, I appreciate it. I didn't dislike it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear that you didn't dislike my son.
Your boy, you know, listen, if I had to defend him against an antagonist or a villain of some sort, I would do it.
Okay. All right.
Am I going to die for him?
No.
Nah, I'm not.
You're not going to take I got to take a bullet for the Proto Man.
No, I might take a punch for him, but I'm not going to take a bullet.
Okay. All right.
And he's, you know what? He's strong enough, he can defend himself.
That's true. I mean, he's a Robo Man.
He's a robot.
He's got a gun for an arm.
Yeah, I mean, I can't do better than that.
And he can consume the corpses of his enemies to gain their power.
Mhm.
So
really, who's in this fight? Why am I fighting in the first
place? Yeah, I don't know. Like, you should probably just get out of the way. Let him do his thing.
Yeah, Jesus.
How do you jump into the second half of those?
Usually I just jump in by going, welcome back. We're back. And then that.
Hooray, we're back. Was that it?
Here, we're back with David Faulkner.
Hello.
And this half, we're going to talk about my son.
Yeah.
So I was sort of, you know, you laid down basically a sick track, and I was going to improvise on top of it. And I thought about the concept of concept albums.
Mm.
And albums that are made around a central idea for both fun and profit.
Uh-huh.
And I thought about the album Urinal Street Station by the Yellow River Boys. Now, this album is, we'll say this up front, it's a comedy album. I don't think, I really hope nobody in the world is a serious fan of this album. It was written by Greg Turkington and Tim Heidecker. And I think mostly performed by Tim Heidecker and, you know, some assorted musicians. And it's just an entire album about drinking urine as a practice.
Yep.
The first, they originally released a single of the song Hot Piss, which I'm sure you could tell was the single from this album. And, about 3 years or so ago, right when it came out, was the weekend of my sister's wedding. And Max was my guest to the wedding, and we were hanging out in the hotel where the wedding was taking place, like basically for 2 days before the wedding, just listening to this song and kept singing the chorus of it to each other just to make each other crack up. Max owns a vinyl pressing, a yellow vinyl pressing
of
this album, which is apparently banned at his home because his wife cannot tolerate it. but it's something that just every time I'm on shuffle in my iTunes library and a Yellow River Boys song comes up, it like never fails to make me crack up. And yeah, just listening to the album, it's like, it's extremely gross, sure. But it's also just incredibly funny. Like basically the premises of it and a lot of the language used in it, I find very entertaining.
It's so when you sent over your son, who arrived sopping wet with what I prayed was water,
but
I knew it wasn't water. It was that yellow water.
That we all produce in our bodies.
We all produce it. It's natural. Okay, it's just natural.
It's natural and it's healthy. It's good for you.
It's oh man. So I saw that and I was at work and I was just like, all right, well, this sounds kind of like a weird Yellow River Boys. This sounds kind of weird. I guess I'll just like give this a quick Google. And I was like, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, administrators looking at my work computer. I'm sorry. Had to see that side of me. Guess this is what you think I'm into now.
Because they're carefully perusing your browsers.
Oh, yeah. They're like, oh, this is
what is this
good
webpage about? Mm. Oh, he's so gross.
Oh, he's a dirty, he's a piss boy.
He's a piss guzzling boy.
Oh, he's one of them piss guzzlers. Let him know that on Fridays we do the piss guzzle.
You got a piss club at work?
Oh, yeah. No, it's the piss pot.
Oh.
Everybody, everyone contributes, you know, on Friday we piss into a giant cistern and just kind of ladle it out over the course of the evening. You know, it brings everyone together.
Sounds delicious.
Oh, it's great. It's great. Really, there's some talented pissers, you know.
People sometimes get good streams.
Yeah, or like, you're like, is that coconut? Wow.
Wow, so you're getting flavors. You're getting there's some subtlety. Like gourmet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, when you've drunk enough piss, when you've had as much piss as I have.
So I assume, I'm just assuming from this conversation that, because I feel like there are two buckets you fall into, no pun intended, when you listen to this album, and it's either people who are so viscerally grossed out by it that they can't handle it, and people who find it funny.
I did find it funny, so I would like to point out that at first I did not realize it was Tim Heidecker that was doing this, and I just listened through the album, and as I was walking, like, I'm watching my friend's dog this weekend, so I was walking the dog, and I'm listening to this album, and I'm just thinking, what in the fuck am I listening to? What the shit? And I'm just like hoping I don't run into anybody that I know. They're like, oh, hey, what are you listening to? Like, oh, you know, Hot Piss. Just
Truck Stop Piss Club.
Truck Stop Piss Club. That was, I like that one, actually. So the thing, here's the thing about this. The music is good. It's like Lynyrd Skynyrd or like Seeger or something. Like, it's just that classic. Let me look at my notes.
It's just classic rock, basically.
Yeah, it's the same sort of bland classic rock stylings and sort of meathead power rock of the 70s and 80s.
Uh-huh.
So my first listen to through, I did not realize it was a Tim Heidecker thing. And let me tell you, that just brought everything into focus.
It all became clear suddenly.
Suddenly it was piss clear.
As clear as golden piss.
Yeah.
Not the cloudy kind. We're talking about clear.
And let me tell you, I regret that I got a nice tall glass of iced tea to drink as we're doing this podcast.
I don't know. At least it's not apple juice.
Mm. True.
I did actually, like, soon after I came back from Christmas break, I was at a grocery store behind a guy who did have, like, about three things of Minute Maid apple juice. Like, those big bottles. I texted that picture to Max.
Did you start, like, subtly playing the song on your iPhone?
I hummed it a little bit, and I hoped that maybe he would turn around, you know, give me the high sign. Like, we both know. He didn't. So I just have to assume that maybe he thought I might have been humming something else. Like, maybe I wasn't clear enough.
Yeah.
Well, but
it's hard to know who's like a fellow piss enthusiast.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really know until you see them doing it.
until you see them drinking their own urine.
Uh-huh. Or other people's. Whichever.
Just from my own knowledge of how the body works, don't do this thing.
Bear Grylls does it.
Don't do anything Bear Grylls does.
Oh, you're saying it could be unhealthy? For me to drop myself into the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend that for you, Kathy.
And just
eating
whatever animals or plants I find in the forest?
Well, I caught this thing, so I guess I'll eat it.
This is what Bear Grylls would do, right?
Yeah. This lizard has been dead in the sun for a while, but I think it's good.
So going back to sort of the fantasy
mm-hmm.
points that we touched on in the first thing, I mean, yeah. There is a fantasy world in Urinal Street Station. At least, I hope it is a fantasy world. Of one in which there are, like, it's pretty common
mm-hmm.
that there will be a club in the back of a truck stop where people drink their own urine. Like,
see, I tested this. To see if this is a fantasy thing by Googling Piss Club and searching through major cities and Google Maps for Piss Club. Don't do that.
Oh.
And to the FBI agents that are rapidly descending on my house, see you soon, boys. What's up?
Hey, guys.
It was for a podcast.
Get some coffee brewing for them so they'll feel welcome when they get here. And maybe, you know, build up those bladders a little bit.
Exactly. Like, oh, Dale Cooper, you've aged well.
Like, I understand that the concept of water sports, whatever, exists. I'm sure yes. There are people who have done this or like it. But not in the same way as the Yellow River Boys mythos.
Yeah, no, they are on a whole different...
Like, I don't think it's even sexual in this album.
No, it's just...
They love the taste and they love doing it.
Yeah.
They think it's a healthy beverage.
Yeah, it's just a fun, clean thing to do with your buds. You just, you know, go down, drink a bunch of piss.
Uh-huh.
Good old times.
And then, well, okay, there's some perversion. I mean, they do drink it out of... in the song, Slurp It Up, which I'm sure is another highlight.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that
they
was...
They do it out of the family dog bowl.
That song did kind of get to me. yeah, that one. I was trying to find lyrics online for some of these songs.
Certainly, you can get to them. I'm sure they have a Bandcamp page.
Do they?
I think so.
Do they? I was surprised at the minimal internet footprint of the Yellow River Boys. It was not as
they have a Facebook fan page. Okay. Only 388 people on it.
Hmm.
They also had a Twitter account, but it's pretty inactive these days.
Yeah. I'm really surprised because it seems like more people would want to be associated with that act. Seems like, yeah, a lot of people would want.
Well, so here's the official description on the label that sells it. Mm-hmm. It's the album for those of us who believe the human mouth smiles the most when it's being used as a makeshift urinal. Mm. Underground leaders of the pee freak scene, your shame no longer has to be private. That's it. And this is pretty simple.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, I chose the Proto Men album because it was deeply meaningful to me. And I thought it told a good story. Let's talk a little bit about how you came to decide that this was what you wanted my ears to experience for the better part of a week.
I don't know. I was part of a deciding a son is getting in touch with the things I believe is getting in touch with the things that bring you delight.
Okay.
I don't think it necessarily has to be something that is deeply meaningful or has it had an impact on, you know, your soul or, you know, any kind of deeper understanding of yourself or the world. If it's just something I think that brings you happiness and joy, then I think it deserves to be there. And I this is definitely one thing that does that for me. I mean, as I said earlier, like just listening to it can make me happy basically. And partially because it's so gross and it's so cringeworthy. And it's so catchy. That's, I think, the real kicker, right? Mm, mm-hmm. Is that the choruses of these songs get stuck in your head.
Yes, they do.
Like, you can easily sing along to any of them. Too easily, almost.
Yeah, yeah. I caught myself humming Hot Piss yesterday, and then I had to go take a shower.
It's a catchy song. But it's, anytime you stop to listen to the lyrics of any of these songs, because, yeah, you could just have them on in the background, and people might not even notice what they're about. But as soon as you listen to the lyrics, like, this is so, and the density of jokes too for a comedy or comedy music concept thing, where sometimes they'll be like, oh, there's one joke per song, or there's like one funny thing. But I think that the density of funny lyrics in this is pretty high.
Yeah, that's true.
It's gross, but it's funny. I mean, there's a certain brand, obviously, of humor that focuses on the gross, and Tim Heidecker especially likes to traffic in it. But it's, you know, it's, I think it's funny.
It is funny, and I did enjoy it. I did laugh. As I mentioned, it took me some time to realize that it was intended as a comedy album. So that kind of, which I don't know what that says about me.
It's called Urinal Street Station.
I know. And it's by the Yellow River Boys. I think I was just like, I had bought into this fantasy so hard. I was just like, oh my Christ, this is just the most horrifying thing I have ever heard.
I love that though, that you thought of it as being serious.
Yeah.
For a while.
There was a non-trivial period of time where I was convinced that this was a real thing. And that you were just kind of like, yeah, look at this horrifying piece of art that I found. Enjoy it. Just swim in this.
Yeah, because maybe I was just trying to like come clean about one of my personal interests.
Well, you know, that there's
come
really
clean
no
is
better...
again, you know, metaphorically, not literally there.
Oh no! You got
very dirty. I'm filthy.
I was gonna say, yeah, you'd have to get filthy to come clean. it should be an album, I would think.
Get filthy to come clean. Let's trademark it today.
Or maybe some kind of For some reason, I conflated in my head for a fraction of a second urine testing with semen viability testing, and had this idea for a product called Come Clean that would just basically like clean your semen so if it were tested for drugs.
That'd actually be a good service. If you could do that chemically, it might be illegal.
Yeah.
But you could get a lot of clients.
Probably.
Just think of people on parole and stuff like that.
Right.
You wouldn't test semen, though, I guess.
Right? No one would. There'd be no reason to test semen. I'm going to need a cum sample. Like, you mean a urine sample?
Nope. No. There's certain stuff that can only be detected in the cum, cannot be detected in urine. We found a drug, a special drug that's cum only.
Yeah, only excreted in cum. The follow-up band of the Yellow River Boys is the White Rapid Lads. And they sing exclusively about cum.
Listen, this is a money-making opportunity for you. I think you need to start the White Rapid Lads.
The White Rapids Lads. Oh, my God. Well, that would be a thing I could do.
It certainly is.
If this whole toxicology thing doesn't work out.
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes we find out we don't need toxicologists. But we do need people to write really gross concept albums.
Just entirely about cum.
Sometimes society realizes that.
Sometimes it does. I think one of the... You were talking about the density of the jokes. One thing that's interesting about this album is that the very existence of it is a joke. The fact that the production value is so high for what is essentially like the single joke, people drinking pee.
It's just one joke for an entire album, yeah.
Which is the most Tim Heidecker thing I can think of, is just going to these extravagant lengths for this one joke that is not super clever, but like it's so well put together.
It's not clever at all.
Right, it's not clever at all.
It's not like, wow, I can't believe they thought of that at all. It's purely a gross out gag.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can understate Greg Turkington's influence, because I don't know if you know.
I don't.
He is the man behind Neil Hamburger, who's basically an insult comic, an in-character insult comic.
Okay.
Very well regarded amongst especially comedians. Maybe doesn't have quite the mainstream appeal because he tends to just insult people, but like he will do strings of basically his main thing is retweeting people talking about how Taco Bell gave them diarrhea. And just, like, you know, piling insults upon institutions that he feels are, you know, unworthy in some way.
Is it okay.
Yeah, so anyways, I think he was an instrumental part of it. But I think, you know, Tim Heidecker probably did most of the musical elements of it.
Yeah. I didn't realize how talented he was as a musician.
Like, he's pretty good. He's releasing a solo album. And he and Davin Wood, Kathy Fisher Twitter follower Davin Wood, have done two albums of basically like 70s style yacht rock under the name Heidecker and Wood, which are actually like decent. They're not even that funny. It's just like, we really like yacht rock. We're going to make two albums of it.
Okay. Interesting.
So if you like their musical stylings, definitely look into that.
Interesting. I noticed that Vice actually ranked the Yellow River Boys' Urinal Street Station as their number one album of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
It beat out Kanye's Yeezy album.
Uh-huh.
It beat out the Postal Service re-release. I would like to point out, it beat out the number 30 on that list is called Pissed Jeans by The Honeys.
Really? So they had two piss-themed albums on the list that year?
Yeah, and possibly more. I haven't actually looked through all of them, but it just it has me wondering, do you think there was, like, a piss drinker?
Maybe there's... Vice has its own piss club at the magazine.
Do you think there's, like, a secret backdoor XML page you could get to that's just, like, I'll piss all the time.
I think it's time to hack into the mainframe. The Vice.com mainframe.
It's time to get your Oculus Rift. Jack in.
Uh-huh. Transfer your consciousness to online.
Exactly. Exactly. Hack the mainframe. Make sure you're wearing fingerless gloves. That is vitally important.
So important. I don't think people realize how key fingerless gloves are to getting online.
And God help you if they're not leather.
God help you.
Like, it just, that...
God help the palms of your hands, I'll tell you that.
I briefly, we're going to dive into some history, David history. Mm-hmm. I went through a period of time in high school where I thought it was really cool to wear fingerless gloves all the time.
Obviously.
Because I was that kid.
Uh-huh.
But I realized after about a day that was a shitty idea because your hands get so sweaty.
Uh-huh.
And as a person who likes to wash their hands, like, a lot, because, like, the world is full of gross things and people don't wash their hands nearly enough and they touch you and it's gross and I hate it. That became a problem because...
Yeah, you gotta take them off.
Yeah, you have to take them off, or then, like, they, like, I gotta wash these at the end of the day, because, like, they were touching, I'm not washing the gloves, and they're touching stuff.
You get into a whole glove wash scenario, you gotta have a whole new different pair of gloves for every day of the week.
Who can afford that?
Especially not in high school.
Your budget
for fingerless gloves is maybe $15.
Tops.
A month.
Tops.
Tops.
And you know what? Most of those gloves are just, they're falling in the piss buckets, so.
Well, the problem is you were dealing with a lot of piss buckets.
Mm.
Maybe if you would maybe spend less time handling those.
Well, look, I was in high school. I got a job at the piss club out behind the railroad station. You know, a lot of kids would do it, you know.
Where you're swabbing out the old piss.
Yeah, you know, you're a piss boy. You go out there, you collect the buckets, bring them in, you know, sometimes you got to sort, and, you know, people want their piss. They come by, it's been a long day at work.
And they want a fresh bucket, too. You don't want a bucket that's been around, been caked, right, with old piss. You want fresh piss, hot piss.
Yeah.
Hot piss, as it were.
Hot piss. And they can taste if you reheat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. It's got to be heat from the human body.
Yeah. It really opens the bouquet of flavors.
Sure. Yeah. As soon as it sits in the air and it cools down, you lose a whole lot just to evaporation.
Yeah. Oh, man. Highly volatile piss.
Yep.
This is going to be your most successful episode ever.
Oh, God. I hope so.
In which we spend half an hour talking about piss.
I brought this upon us. I created this situation. So I... cannot be ashamed of it, and I will not apologize. Per usual, I am completely unapologetic.
I think that we've covered a lot of really important ground here. We've addressed some real challenging ideas.
That's true, and isn't that what it's all about? Isn't that what the podcast game is all about?
I think that's art, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Art is, so yesterday I went to it was an experimental film screening.
Uh-huh.
You were a film major, so you...
I was.
You no doubt have experimented with film.
Yeah, sure. If you can call it that.
I mean, you were in college, you know, everyone...
We all experimented. Listen.
Yeah. Some of...
I smoked some film in my time. Got not very high.
It's celluloid.
It just burns and then it's gone pretty much immediately.
Yeah, that silver nitrate, like, not good for you. You don't want to inhale.
Well, it's
that.
A toxin, but it's not really an intoxicant, as it were.
And that's an important distinction. They don't tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
You
think that would be like day one of film school?
Do not smoke the film.
You won't get high.
God, how many times do we have to tell you? How many times?
How many students do we have to lose to the horrible tragedy of silver nitrate poisoning before it sinks in? Don't smoke the film.
Who started doing this anyway?
Who knows? It's just one of those urban legends, you know?
Yeah. The I won't belabor the point because it's not very interesting. But the one thing I would say is that the first film was, I would describe as very challenging to watch because it was just like a lot of very quick cuts and very loud chirps and tones and beeps.
Is it like Arnulf Rayner?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, sorry. if you were a film major, you'd understand. I love Arnulf Rayner. But
it was one of those things where like it was just really hard to watch because it was really unpleasant. It was a viscerally unpleasant experience.
Yep.
And then after that, after it ended, I turned to my friend and I was just like, that was really bad, really unpleasant. She's like, yeah, but was it bad? And I was like, I can't really say it was bad because if the idea behind art is that art makes you feel something, it made me feel something. And what it made me feel was bad. It made me feel horrible.
Yeah, but I would argue, yeah, that it's still art. It's still successful art. Unsuccessful art is only art that evokes no emotion at all, right?
Yes, yes. And it certainly evoked an emotion. And that emotion was, I need to leave.
Please, please don't make me do this anymore.
I want this to end. And Your Own Little Street Station evokes similar emotions to me. I appreciate it. It's very well done. I get the joke, and I like it. I like that it exists.
Okay.
I like that it exists as a thing. And I do think it's funny. And it's the sort of thing that if it were to pop up every once in a while, I'd be like, yeah, that's funny. But it's probably not something I'm going to actively seek out.
So I think we both came to the same conclusion for each other's sons this week.
I think so.
For different reasons.
Yeah. Although I do want to try this experiment where I just blast this really loud in my office and see if people notice.
Well, see, if they can't hear the lyrics clearly, I don't think they will.
They'll just be like, oh, what's that band you've been listening to a lot?
Hey, you got really into classic rock recently?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the same thing where I want to play it at like a party where there's just like background music and people are talking over it and see if anyone notices.
Oh, man, you have to do this now.
I know. I see. Here's the thing. Max has talked about doing this at his wedding in the past, but I know Estelle really hates it.
Oh my God.
So I don't know if he would get away with it, but oh God, I would love to see him try.
Oh my God, it's the happiest day of their lives, and she would be furious.
She'd be so mad at him.
I kind of want him to do it, but I kind of don't want him to get in trouble.
Well, at least may wait until like later in the night when everyone's sort of drunk.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how he could pull it off, but I think it would be interesting to try.
I support this.
Maybe I'll do it at my wedding.
There you go.
I'll get married just to do this.
Get me. This will be the song playing as you walk down the aisle.
Oh, obviously. I have Hot Piss. I'll have Mr. Mud. I have Mr. Mud playing. Which is, we should point out, that's the grossest song because it's about shit eating in addition to diarrhea drinking.
Yeah.
Which is worse than urine drinking. In
my opinion. Oh, boy.
In this commentator's humble opinion, eating feces is worse than drinking urine.
I'm going to agree.
Okay.
I'm going to agree that it's worse. Please don't do either of these things.
This Internet? Is a professional opinion from a toxicologist.
Internet, I know you're out there. I know you're listening. Don't do these things. Please don't do these things. For me, just because it would make me really sad. And also because it's super not healthy. It's super a bad idea. Just don't do it. Oh, your body's getting rid of those things for a reason. It wants them out. Do not put them back in.
There's more nutrients in there still, David.
No, there are not.
There's still some. There's gotta be some.
No. It is all discarded garbage. It's garbage. That's your body getting rid of garbage.
David, do you want to rate?
I do want to rate.
What scale are you going to rate this on?
I am going to rate this in terms of apple jugs. Apple juice jugs.
Okay.
Jugs of apple juice.
Jugs of apple juice.
And I would give this 3.5 hot piping jugs.
Oh, hot juice.
3.5 hot piping jugs of apple juice out of 5.
Is it still apple juice in the jugs or is it urine in the jugs? Or we don't know.
I'll never tell.
You have to taste it to find out.
There's only one way to find out, Kathy. Gotta drink that jug till it's dry.
Well, what a fruitful discussion we had this week.
This has been an absolute delight. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Is there anything you would like to plug or advocate for at the end of this episode?
If only I did more creative things. I don't, unfortunately.
I've also opened this up to be, you can advocate for another thing that you want other people to enjoy.
I like that. I like that. So I'm a colossal nerd, and I like reading science books, just kind of for fun, like pop science books. And very recently, I finished reading a book called Smoking Ears and Screaming Teeth, A History of Self-Experimentation. And it's all about these really wacky and interesting, it's a history of these wacky and interesting scientists throughout the ages that wanted to know the answers to a lot of questions, and so the way that they figured it out was by testing things on themselves, because they couldn't justify doing it to anybody else. They're like, well...
Could not get anyone to sign enough waivers.
Yeah, it's like, there's no way, and like, in a lot of cases, they're just like, it's not even a question of waivers, like, there are other people that would volunteer, but it's like, look, I'm the only one who really understands the risks here, so it's really only fair.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun, it's a great book, and it's kind of a cool thing to, way of seeing how science is not really that dry, it's not really that boring, it's actually, science is crazy. As a field.
Or scientists have been crazy often.
Yeah, it's time. It's true. It takes a certain type of personality to devote their lives to trying to understand one tiny aspect of the universe. And
to potentially destroy their bodies in the process.
Exactly. Because isn't that what we want to do? Find something we love and just let it destroy us?
Well, exactly. Either that or have a child and conduct experiments on them before they're legally able to sue me.
Well, that's a little bit on the nose, but you know, luckily that'll get edited out in post, I'm sure. So.
Maybe. We'll see.
We'll see. Oh, well, the FBI agents are at my door.
All right, before you go, remember you should rate and subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at ThisIsMySon, and be online at ThisIsMySon.com.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.